The top of Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, and we had mentioned on the previous Amud that according to Rabbi Yochanan, amongst the list of six things that'll bring him the Keren, the Olam Haba, but the Peros here in this world, one of them is Hadanes Chaver L'Kaf Zchus. Tan Rabbanan, Hadanes Chaver L'Kaf Zchus, Donen Oso L'Zchus. This is a perfect application of the principle of Mida Keneged Mida. He judges us favorably, always finding a way of interpreting our actions with Tzadah Tov. So too, up in Shemayim, they'll treat him that way, and they will be Danim L'Kaf Zchus, and they'll be Machriya Sakaf when he's up there, standing in front of the heavenly tribunal. They will tip the scale in his favor to try to find a vindication for him, just as he did for others. Maisa, and now the Gemara is going to give us a whole string of stories about Dan L'Kaf Zchus. Echad Shiyored Migolil Ha'Elyon, someone who came down from the north, V'Niskar, and he was hired. Eitzel Balabais Echad Badarom, he was hired for a 3-year stint to work for someone down south, Shalosh Shanim. Erev Yom HaKippurim, the worker turns to the Balabais and he says, Tein li schari, now it's time for me to go back to the north, V'elech, and I'll go, V'ozen es ishti v'bonai, I'll be able to support my family. Amar lo, to his chagrin, the Baal Bais responded, Ein li mos. Amar lo, Tein li peros. Okay, if you can't give me cash, maybe you don't have any liquid assets, at least give me peros, and I'll be able to support my family with the peros. Amar lo, the Baal Bais says to you, Ein li, I don't have. So again, the worker says, Tein li karka. Can you give me a piece of karka? Maybe I could sell it on the market. Once again, as we could guess, the Baal Bais responds, Ainli, I have no karka. And this is a wealthy fellow, you know, he's got karka coming out of his ears. Tainli Behema, can you give me an animal at least? Maybe I'll sell it on the market. Ainli, I have no animals to give you. Tainli Karmuk Susos, can you give me beds or bed coverings, pillows? Ainli, have nothing. Hifshil Kalov Leachorov, so the worker puts whatever he has on his back, his knapsack, throws it over his back, you know, like Huckleberry Finn style, and holach lebeso, and he goes back to his house. Bepachei nefesh, he's kind of down. You can imagine he has no food, he has no money to bring to his family. Liacha regel, which probably means after Sukkis, Natal Balabais Scharo, Biyado, the Balabais puts the money in his hands, the imo, and together with it, Masoi Shlosha Chamorim. He has 3 mules that are laden down with different things. Echad Shel Machal, one full of food. Echad Shel Mishteh, one of more luxurious items, perhaps wine. Echad shel minei megadim, a 3rd mule full of good, tasty sweets. V'holach lo lebeso, he comes to the worker, and they sit down, they eat a meal. Achar shel nosan lo scharo, he paid him his wages, and he brought him all these gifts in the mules, 3 mules worth of gifts. Amalo, the Baal Bais says to the worker, B'shosha Amarti Li, when you said to me, Tein li schari, the Amarti Lcha Ein li mos, I don't have money to pay you, V'meh chashda detani, you must have suspected me that I was cheating you. And the worker said, Amarti, I said to myself, Shema prakmatya bezol nizdamnu lcha, perhaps you had a golden opportunity to purchase merchandise at a slash price, you know, there was a special sale, and you use the money to invest so that you would be able to build up your business. This was a golden opportunity. And the monies that you had certainly designated for me, these were the only funds that you had to invest. And that's why you have no money to pay me. Baal Bais probes him even further. B'sha shamati, amarta li tain li behemav, amarta, and I said, ain li behemav, I don't have an animal to give you. B'mechashtetani, did you suspect me of trying to cheat you? Amarti, no, I said, shema muskeres b'yad acherim. Maybe your animals were rented out to others. Baal Bais asks him, and b'sha shamata li, Tainli Karkov, Amarti Lucha, Ainli Karkov, Amechashadatani, yes, for a piece of land. And I said, I have no land to give you. What conclusion did you draw at that point? Amarti, you know, I said to myself, Shema, perhaps, Muchreches, Biharachirimi. Maybe you used your various, fields to hire workers. And you were going to pay them based on their produce. B'shoshamati chayinli peros, b'mechashatana. What do you think of when I said I have no peros to offer you? Amarti shema ina musaros. Maybe they're all tevel, and therefore you can't give them to me. I mean, here's a little bit difficult. I mean, why couldn't he be mafresh maser at that point? Marsha says that this all took place on Erev Yom Kippur, and therefore he didn't have time to be mafresh maseros. Now the question is, why couldn't he pay him up with peros enam musarim? You know, let the soch himself be mafresh masros. So this has to do with the Rambam in Hilchas Masros, Perek Vav, ein lefroach chov beperos tevel, that you don't pay up your debts with tevel. He goes and asks him, b'sha shemati l'cho she'ein li karim uksusos, b'mecha shedetoli, what did you think when I said I have no linens to give you, no beddings to give you. Amarti, I said, Shema, perhaps Higdish called Nechos v'Lashamayim. Maybe you sanctified all of your possessions to Shamayim. And again, at this point, we have to ask the question, well, if that's what the Sachir was thinking about the Baal Bais, then he could have answered up all the other questions and said that's why he didn't have any of the above to give him. I don't know why he focused only on Karim Uksasos. In any event, leaving that out for a moment, Ha'avoda, the Baal Bais, Omer Lo, says to him, Aloshen Shvua, Kachoya, everything that you imagined was really true. Hidarti kol nechosai, I sanctified all my possessions l'shamayim. And the reason for that is to prohibit anybody from enjoying the benefits of my possessions. Bishvil Hurkinus b'nei, because I have a son named Hurkinus, Shlo Asak b'Torah. And he was negligent in the study of Torah. So as a kind of, almost to exclude him from enjoying the benefits of my possessions, I sanctified them to Shamayim, and this way I was hoping he would get the message that he doesn't deserve any of my possessions. So now, Kshabasi Eitzel Chaveri Shabadoro, I went to the scholars in the south, and he tiruli called Nidorai, and I was able to achieve a Hataras Nidorim for all those vows and pledges that he took upon myself. Now I could come to you and pay you. And now, for you, Kishem Shedantoni Luschus, just like you judge me favorably in all these cases, Hamokom Yodin Oscha Luschus. And just as you have judged me favorably, so men, the Omnipresent One, God in heaven, should judge you favorably. Now, We mentioned before that Avoda is a Lashon Shvua, and basically what a person does is he links, when he swears, he links his words to an object of sanctity. That's what Avoda means over here. And just like something that's sanctified cannot be benefited from, so too an oath cannot be violated. Now, as far as the employer, like the Baal Bayis, he's allowed, of course, to buy merchandise at a cheaper price if that's what they're offering. And he could use the money that was earmarked to pay his worker as long as the worker's wages aren't due. He doesn't have to pay him now. He could delay that payment. So therefore, the employer would rather keep the money now on hand, place it, and invest it in a position where he'll be able to fulfill his obligation later on when the wages become due. And that's exactly what the Baal Bayis was doing. Now, the word chachirus has to do with leasing a land to a tenant farmer, and this tenant farmer pays for the lease with a fixed amount of produce from the crops that he grows. As far as tevel is concerned, one is not permitted to give tevel, as we said, to an unlearned person. And this worker, apparently, was not a great scholar. And it could be that the homeowner, the Baal Bayis, was the Tana Rebbe Elazar ben Hurkitis, and his worker was none other than Rabbi Akiva. That's how the Shultis interprets this Gemara. This is Rabbi Akiva in his youth, before he became a scholar. He possessed a sterling character, and he was Don, the Baal Bayis, in this case, Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkitis, Lekaf Schus. Once the employee, the Sachir, who might have been Rabbi Akiva, explained the Karim Uksusos by saying that he was Magdish, then why couldn't he use that for everything else? And the answer is, for everything else he found another explanation. He didn't want to use this way out of idea of Hegdesh, but in the case of Karim Uksusos, there the employee saw these pillows and bed coverings in the house of the Baal Bayis. He knew they were there. So how could it be that he's not offering them as payment? And the answer was, without any doubt, he was magdish them lashamayim. Another story, Tana Rabbanan, Ma'isa b'chassid echad. Now here, when it comes to chassid echad, we usually assume that's either Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava or Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. Shepada riva achas. He gathered together the funds to redeem a Jewish girl who was captured by those who abducted her, so he paid the ransom money of this Bas Yisrael. Then, afterwards, Baal Amalon, they came to an inn after he had redeemed her, and Ishkiva, he put her to sleep, Tachas Margalosov, you know, at his feet. Lamacha, the next morning, Yored Vitoval, he went into the mikvah, Vishonel Talmidim, and then he went to teach his Shia to the Talmidim. Now, you know, circumstantial evidence seems to indicate that he not only redeemed this woman, but he had some sort of an intimate relationship with her. So he turns to his Talmidim, he says, Omer Lehem, Tachas Margalosai, when I took her into my room and I put her to sleep there at my feet of my bed, what did you suspect me? Amarnu, we said, Shema Yeshbanu Talmud Sheino Baduk LeRebbe. Maybe here in our community, Rebbe is not 100% sure about all the Talmudim, and maybe there will be one Talmud that you can't rely on him with regards to this girl. Maybe if we you felt if you didn't lock her up, so to speak, then who knows what would happen. So therefore you put her to sleep and you knew that she was safe by you. But you saw that I went to mikvah. After all, a person who has a relationship, an intimate relationship, he goes to mikvah. So they said, Omarnu, we said, Shem ibnei Torah haderech era keri l'rebi. Maybe because of this very long trip, and you went all the way out there to redeem this woman from the authorities, from the abductors, I should say, you had a keri, and keri is something that is common when you are on a long road. And Ezra was talking that about keri before he learns Torah, he should be tovel. And even though the Chachamim technically did away with that gzera, but Chassidim, those who were very pious, were careful about that. The original Takon of Ezra. And now, this great scholar, we'll call him Rabbi Yehuda, he says to them, Avoda, Lashon Shvuah again, Kachoya, that's exactly what happened, Batem, and you, Kshem Shadit Dantoni, Lekafskus, Amokom, Yodinoschem, Lekafskus. You too should be judged favorably up in Shamayim. We have to add that even though Lechora the Rebbe didn't do the right thing because he should be marchik himself min achashad, but apparently the chassid had such a reliance on the talmidim that he thought that they would be danim lekaf schus and they wouldn't be choshenim. Pamachas hutzrach dover echod. One time, this is story number three, the Talmidei Chachamim needed something from a Goyita. She was a Matronusa, she was a very significant woman with a status even amongst the authorities. Shekol Gdolei Romi, that all the greats of Romi Mitsuyan Etzla. Now, I'm not exactly sure if everybody agrees with the interpretation of the Dikduke Chachamim, Chaverim, excuse me, on Tainis, but how did she gain her status? Apparently, this noble woman was not so noble, but she was held as a high-class woman of ill repute, so to speak, and all the Gedolei Romi used to come to her. You know, they all made appointments to see her. Anyway, she had the pull, and she was able to, with the vitamin P, to protectia, to get what they needed, what the Talmidei Chacham needed. Amru. So the Chacham said, Mi Yelech. Who could we send to her house to put forward this request? We need someone who's absolutely trustworthy, wouldn't be tempted by this woman. So, Amar lahem Rav Yeshua, ani eilech. And when they asked who's willing to volunteer, Rav Yeshua volunteered. Alach Rav Yeshua v'talmidov. He went with his students. Came in shigia lePesach Pesah. When he got to the door of our house, cholatz tefilov. He took off his tefillin. Berichuk arba amos. And he placed him at a distance of 4 amos away from the entrance into our house. Nichlas, he goes in. And then, to the surprise of the Talmidim, Nol Adel Spifneim. He locks the door when he goes inside. Achar Shiyotza, after he comes out, Yoav Etovel, he goes to the mikveh, Shana LaTalmidim, and then he teaches. Omalahem, B'shosha Chalatzti Tefillin, B'mechad Shetuni. Why did I take off my tefillin? Talmidim said, Omarnu, we came to the conclusion, Kasavar Rebbe, Shelo yikonsu direi kedusha b'makom tuma, that tefillin which have holiness should not enter in to this place of ill repute, this place that's full of impurities. B'shoshana alti b'mechashedetuni. When I locked the door, what did you think? Certainly, you suspected me of some immorality. Omarnu, we said no. Shemadvar malchus yesh beino leveino. Maybe there's something that is of great concern on behalf of the Jewish people that you have to ask her to, you know, to plea on our behalf. And therefore you wanted to guarantee absolute privacy, that no one else should hear it. Now again, the question is about the Issur Yichud here, when he locks the door and he's together with a non-Jewish woman. And I have here a note from the Ivitz, Rav Yaakov Emden, he writes, Mikra din hayu lachshosh mipnei yichud v'yaf im hayu avadel ima even if, let's say, she had workers who were there, her servants, her slaves, still there would have to be an issue of yichud, because choshen leprutzim, af bas sor, if they're immoral people, doesn't matter how many there are. Elam yishum shayu b'neim tvar malchus lo choshesh li yichud, shebekach lo gozru chachamim. That the gzera of going in a private place with a non-Jewish woman does not apply in the case of Dvar Malchus, of going into a noble woman to ask something on behalf of the Jewish community. Maybe some saliva from her mouth would have fallen on the begodim of Rebbe, and they became tame. Because Chachomim made a gzera regard to non-Jews that they have the status, these women have the status of zovin, v'roka mitame. Because the rok, the saliva of a zav, is mitame. Omer lema avoda kachoya, that's exactly what happened. V'yatem, and you, shem shedantuni l'schus, samokom yodnin eschem l'schus. So we have these four stories, and the moral of the story is that we have to look and find some sort of favorable possibility, even when the odds are stacked against. Find a tzad zchus, and HaKadosh Baruch, when He judges you up on high, He'll look for a tzad zchus. Now the Mishnah told us that you're allowed to clear out the storehouse from these boxes that are full of straw, of grains, all for the sake of a mitzvah. We're not worried about tircha. However, we have to understand that although for the sake of a mitzvah we're going to look aside as far as tircha is concerned, but we still have an issue of muktzah. And the Mishnah gave us a whole list of food that was packaged in these boxes that weren't muktzah, and therefore you're allowed to be mefana. And on the other hand, boxes that were full of food that are muktzah. And now the Gemara wants to analyze in each case, why is it muktzah, why is it not muktzah? So mefana and truma tahora, if he's got truma tahora in one of the boxes, he's allowed to move it and be mefana. There's no muktzah here because it's truma tahora. So the Gemara asks pshita, what was the havamina lo tzricha? I need a chiddush here. The mancha b'yad Yisrael. The truma was in the hands of a non-kohen. Ma'od detem, I might think, came into lochaz yalei. What is the non-kohen going to do with this truma? He's not allowed to eat this truma. It's a severe iser if he does it. He's a czar. His aunt might think, therefore, also the taltala. What heter, what meaning, what benefit could he get from this truma? Kamash malan. Therefore, the Mishnah wants to tell me a chiddush that kevan techazil a kohen, since the food is suitable for a kohen, shapir dami, it is therefore mutar b'tilta, it's not muktzah even for Yisrael. Because anything that's edible, that's suitable, is not mukta, even if it's not suitable for you, but it's suitable and it's kosher for someone else. Udmai. Now the Gemara has an objection. Dmai, which requires afrosha, that should be mukta. Dmai olo chazile, it's not edible for him, so it should be mukta. And the Gemara answers, "Kevan di boy mafkele l'nchosev avi oni v'chazile hashtenami chazile." In theory, it is edible to him because d'mai is mutalaniyim. A person who has money, he could be mafkir all his possessions. All his assets now have become hefker, and now pidin strictly according to the law, he's an oni. So we see clearly with this migu that there is a feasibility that even an asher could eat d'mai, albeit not now in his present status with all his possessions, but he still is shy to become an oni and eat the d'mai. And therefore we consider it hashnami, as if now, even without being mafkir nechosim, it's chazile, it's edible for him. I heard once when I was in high school from my Rebbe, Rabbi Braunspiegel Shlita, he said that Tumai is an Iser Gavra, not an Iser Heftza. So there's nothing inherent in the Tumai that's also, it's not Tevel. It's a Chiv Gavra and an Iser Gavra. Haraya, that's mutter for one Gavra, even though it's also to another Gavra. This I remember from high school. This not, we learned in the Mishnah in Tumai, Machilnes Aniyim Tumai. We're allowed to feed Tumai Taniyim when the Rabbanon instituted their enactment of an Iser Tumai. They didn't include Aniyim in the group of people who are enjoined from eating Tumai. Ve'es ha'achsanya Tumai. Achsanya is a sugya in Erevin about Daf Yudzayin of Beis on with regard to the military soldiers of Malchi Yisrael. They're allowed to eat Tumai. And the reason for that is because when the king said to the people in the city that you are obligated to feed and support the Chayalim who will come through your city, these are Chayalim that are now Aniyim. They may have a lot of money in the bank, but virtually they're Aniyim because now they're just, you know, in uniform. They don't have access to their funds, and therefore we treat them like Aniyim and we're allowed to feed them to Mai. Yomer of Huna Tana, we learned in a brisa of Beit Shammai Omrim, Ein Machilin Saniim Tmai Vesachsanya Tmai, but Beit Shil Omrim, Machilin Saniim Tmai Vesachsanya Tmai. Beit Shammai holds that when the Rabbanan enacted this Gezerah, they were afraid that the Amorites who sell you this grain was not Mafrish, Trumas, and Maestros. It has a full fledged din of Tevel, Mid Rabbanan albeit, and there is no one who could eat that Tevel. It's an Isa Hefta for everybody. Whereas Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel disagreed, and they hold the Aniyim were and the Achsanya that we mentioned before, they were excluded from the initial enactment that enjoins us from eating Tumai. And now we're going to add the Iboy Mafkalein and Achase, that since anyone theoretically could become an Ani, if he would just be Mafkas and Achasim, therefore Tumai is something that's Roy, it is fit for him to eat. Like we have a Mishnah in Pesachim, that although you're not allowed to make matzah on Pesach, or the matzah that you want to designate for the mitzvah matzah cannot be matzah asura, it can't be tevel, but it could be d'mai. Why? Because it's very possible, theoretically at least, that this person would be able to eat this matzah of d'mai, because he can make himself into an oni. Also in Mishnah's Brachas, we learned about d'mai with regard to zimun. We don't make a zimun to bench together on something that's Asur, but nevertheless we will bench Bezimun on Tvai. And once again, the Gemara is going to employ the same logic that Iboy Mafkele Linachase Bahavi Ani. Let's give a little bit of an introduction to the next piece of Gemara. The Mishnah is going to talk about Maaser Rishon Shenitlo Trumaso, that it's mutter, and you can be mafane it, it's not mukta, peros that grow in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be mafresh truma gedola, and that's designated for the Kohen, let's say it's 1 over 50, 2%. And then, what's ever left after he takes off the trumas of maestros, he has to be mafresh 10% of what's left, which is probably 98% of what he started with. Anyway, he has to give that to the Levi. And the Levi now has an obligation when he receives his Maaser to give Truma from his Maaser. That's called Truma's Maaser. So that's the obligation incumbent on the Levi. Now, before Truma's Maaser were taken off, were tithed, then the Peros have a status of Tevel, they're also Machila, and that applies even to Maaser Rishon in the hands of the Levi before he was Mafis Truma, Truma's Maaser. It's Tevel. Now, Truma Gedola and Trumas Maaser is allowed to be eaten by the Kohen. A Zar is not allowed to eat it. Maaser Rishon is given to the Levi, and it's Mutar V'Achila for Chol Adam. It has no Kedusha, it's Chul. Now, the Gemara understands that Nitla Trumasa means that the Maaser Rishon was given to the Levi, and Trumas Maaser was taken from the Mas of the Levi, and it was given to the Kohen. And the Gemara says, Pshita, if that be the case, then if Truma Gedola is given to the Kohen, or Truma's Mas is given to the Kohen, then for sure, it's Heter Gomor. I mean, why would I think that maybe there's any Samukta in this case? So Gemara answers, Lo Tzricha, what's the case in our Mishnah, with a Chiddush to it, is Hikdimo B'Shibolet. It means that before the Truma Gedola was taken off by the Yisrael, he was Mafrish Masa Rishon. And the Tvua is now in a state of Shibolim. I think you call it in English ears. Anyway, before they go through what's called Meruach, when they become a Kri. Meruach means winnowing. And then after the winnowing, you pack together all the tefuah into a kri, into one whole. So according to the strict letter of the law, the Yisrael first and foremost has to be mafrish truma gedola, and then for the remains he gives mas. If he was makdim the tefuah, meaning he was mafrish the masa before the truma gedola, that's a violation of Allah. Okay, but all this applies if there was already meruach, the grains have been winnowed, and the tefuah is there in the goren. If he was magdib meiser before the truma gedola, while the tefuah was still b'shibolim, then he doesn't violate the law. Our Mishnah wants to know, in a case, in a scenario, where the tefuah was still in shibolim, and the Yisrael, instead of doing what he had to do, step by step, and then giving Truma, and only then giving Maser, he was already Mafrish Maser to the Levi before Truma Gedola. V'nitlai mena, Truma's Maser. The Levi did what he had to do, and he was Mafrish Truma from his Maser. But, lo nitlai mena Truma Gedola. In other words, the Levi, when he received the Maser Rishon, he didn't give any Truma Gedola to the Kohen. He only gave his Trumas Maser to the Kohen. And even though he didn't get that Tefuah when it was in a state of a Chiyuv of Truma Gedola, and in effect he never gave from this Tefuah Truma Gedola, we would have said the following, that Maser Rishon is not permitted to be eaten. It has the status of Tevel until the Truma Gedola was taken off. And therefore, if you cannot eat it, it's Muksa. So our Tana wants to teach me that you don't have to be Mafrish Masers from this Maser, Truma Gedola. It's permissible to eat it without Truma Gedola. V'chiha di'omer Rabbi Avo, Omer Ish Lakish, Maser Rishon Shekdimo B'shibolim, Potem Truma Gedola. That the Levi is not chayv to give Truma Gedola. Again, he has to give his Truma's Maser, but not Truma Gedola. Shenema, where do we derive this from? So if you take a look at Bamidbar Yudches, with regard to the Leviim, and their chiyuv to be Mafish Truma's Maser, it says, Vari Mosem, Mimenu, Truma's Hashem, Maser, Mina Maser. And what do we derive from this pasuk? Maser, Mina Maser, I told you, meaning addressing now the Levi who has Maser Rishon, I commanded the Levi to be Mafrish Truma, Truma's Maser, Velo Truma Gedola. Truma Gedola is the obligation incumbent upon the Baal Bayis, but not on the Levi. Velo Truma Gedola, Truma's Maser. I don't have to ask you, Mr. Levi, to do two things. To be mafresh for the Kohen Trumas Maser, and on top to boot, to fill in for the Baal Bayis and be mafresh Truma Gedola. That's not obligatory. Amalei Rav Papa La Baye Ihochi. If the Torah says that you're potter from Truma Gedola, in the case of Maser, meaning the Levi doesn't have to be mafresh Truma Gedola, is afilu ikdimo bekri. Nami lipotu, why not go one step further and derive that even in a case where the tefuah reached the stage of kri. As we said before, that's an advanced stage when they've already done the zoreh v'ruach, the winnowing, and they package it up in a heap or a finished pile, and the Levi is exempt from Truma Gedola. Is that should apply even after Hikdima Bikri. Namely Potter. Right, Reish Lakish is talking specifically about Hikdima B'Shibolet. But what about Hikdima Bikri? Amaleis Abai Rishan Sarah Papa Olech Amakra. The Pasuk teaches us when it says in the parish of Trumas Maser Bamidbar Yudches, it says, Mikol Matnosechem Tarimu Eis Kol Trumas Hashem. So the letter Kol is a ribui, even this, right? Shekol, kol tzad shel truma nimtza b'maser, chayv ha-levi laharim la-kayin, v'kem lo hifrish ha-yisrael truma gedola, hari yesh b'maser shebi ad ha-levi, chelik min ha-truma, shal yitzorech l'kabal ha-kayin, v'chayv ha-levi la-hafrish kodem she-yafrish trumas maser. Let's read the pasuk that Abai is quoting to her papa. It is, Mikol matnoseichem tarimu eis kol trumas Hashem, and there seems to be a ribui here in the pasuk of kol. Shekol tzad shel truma nimtza b'maser chayv ha-levi laharim ha-kohen. So therefore, if the Israel himself wasn't mafish truma gedola, then it seems that when the maser is in the hands of the Levi, he has also that chelik of truma that's inherent in the maser, and he should make sure that the kohen receives that. And therefore, the Levi has to be mafrish before he's mafrish trumas meiser, he should be mafrish truma gedola. That's the logic of Abai. So if that be the case, the first pasuk that patters the Levi from being mafrish truma gedola from maser rishon, and now we have a second pasuk that says he's chayev. So we should split it up between Shibolim and Kri, Tegmori Asumah Rois. Why do you assume that the pasuk that patters up the Levi when he was mocked him, when the Yisrael was mocked him, Maser for Truma? That's a case of Shibolim. And the Levi doesn't have to give a Truma Gedola. But the pasuk that says now the Ribui that he is Chayev in Truma Gedola, that's a case where the Kedima, the Akedoma of the Maser for the Truma was after reached the stage of Meruach, and it was Kri, right? It was piled up in a Kri after Meruach. So Gemara says, why not say just the opposite? I mean, what's the logic that compels you to divvy it up in that way? So Gemara answers, the logic is very compelling. High idgan, v'high lo idgan. In the case of Kri, it's already after the state of Dagon. Right, the Torah calls Truma Reishis Degancha. And since it's already in the category of Degancha, therefore, there's already a chiyuv of Truma Gedol inherent in these grains. And therefore, it makes a lot of sense to say that there's a chiyuv to give and guarantee the Truma Gedol, that the coin gets his Truma Gedol. It's already after Dagon, it's Reishis Degancha. And therefore, when the Levi took his maser and the coin hasn't been, so to speak, paid up, he hasn't received his due of Truma Gedola, then the Levi has to guarantee, before he does anything, that the coin gets his 1 over 50 of Truma Gedola. Then he has to be mafrish Truma's maser. But high in the case of Shibolim, that's before Meruach, Lo Idgan. At that point, the Levi got maser, and there was no status of Dagon, there was no Chi of Truma, so the Levi got his Maser before there was ever a Chi of Truma that emerged. And therefore, it's Mestaber, it's logical to say that in that particular case, the Levi is not Chayiv to be Mafrish Truma Gedola. Then we get to the Mishnah Maser Sheni, Vehekdish and Niftu, once again, Pshita. After Pidgeon, it's Chulin, Why should I have a habmin? It might be mukta. Lo tzricha. The case of our Mishnah is she nasan es hakeren v'lo nasan es hachomesh. The Torah commands a person when he's poder, either hegdesh or maser sheni, has to add 20% towards the value. So if you have something that's worth 4, he's got to be poder it with 5. And this particular Jew, unfortunately, he did the pidyon, but he didn't pay his chomesh. He didn't add the extra zuz to the 4 zuzin. Kamash malon, the ein chomesh ma'akvis ha'pidyon. The pidyon is still chal. The ma'aser sheni is yosel chulin. You're allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim. The hekdesh is mutar by no bachila, and it's not mukta. But he has an outstanding chov to make up to hekdesh and to buy with in Yerushalayim my sashedi money of that chomesh. The Mishnah says that if you have kupos of turmos, which is yavesh, then it's not mukta. And why not? It's roi. It's suitable to feed the goats. So the Gemara says dafka yavesh avalach lo. What's the difference between yilach and yavesh? My taima. And the answer is lo achla. The a's, the goat is not going to eat it. Kevin de morir. Right, you take away the marirus from the natural state when you dry it. So until it's dried, it's too bitter even for the goat to eat if it's not omed l'achilus behema. Therefore, it is mukta. And now we're on the top of Daf Kuf Chav Ches Omer Aleph. The Mishnah says now listing things that are mukta because they're also b'achil. The first thing on the list is tevel. I think more right away asks pshita. Tevel certainly is mukta because it's also lechel. It's a serious, severe violation. And on Shabbos, you're not allowed to be mafrish maser. So Gemara answers, lo tzricha v'tevel tovel midr abonon. We have a chiyuv of truma or maser min haTorah, but then we have sometimes a situation where technically on a doraisa level you're potur, and the rabbanon enacted and generated a chiyuv truma or maser midr abonon. For example, zro be'atzit sheinu nakuf. So you have two types of flower pots. If it's perforated, got holes, then it's considered like it's growing from the karka, and any plant inside the flower pot is chayiv in trumas and masers. But now we have a case of an otzis she'eno nakuf. So the pot is completely solid on the bottom, and there's no direct yanika from the karka. It's not called mechubal karka. It's really not chayiv in trumas and masers. It's like hydroponics. It grows on water. Here it grows on whatever inside the pot, but that's not karka, and therefore it's not chayiv in trumas and masters. But the Rabbanan said it's chayiv in trumas and masters, and that's the Chiddush Ram Mishnah. Once the Rabbanan have enacted an Iser Achila midin tevel tovel min Rabbanan mimela, it's mukta. Okay, then. So we're now here on the top of Kuf Chaf Ches Amud Aleph, and we're up to Velo Maser Rishon. And we're talking about Maser Rishon, Shelo Nitla Trumaso. And that means that until the Levi takes off his Trumas Maser, then he's not allowed to eat, nobody's allowed to eat from this Maser Rishon. And therefore it's Mukta, because it's also Bachila. And once again, the Gemara is going to ask Pshita. And the Gemara answers, Lo Tzricha Shehikdimo Bekri. Here's a case where the Balabais, the Yisrael, before he was Mafrish Truma Gedola, he was Mafrish Maserish, and he handed it over to the Levi. And the Levi now has Tvua, and there already was a Chiyuv of Truma Gedola inherent in this Tvua. Why? Because the Balabais, before he gave the Maser to the Levi, he brought his Tvua to the state of Kri, which means it was after Meruach, it was after Digun, and instead of giving Truma Gedola, which is now coming to the Kohen, it's inherent in the Tvua, Notol Bimenu Maser, he gave Maser Rishon to the Levi, Velo Nitlu Menu Truma Gedola, without being Mafish Truma Gedola. I might have thought, Kida Omer Le Rav Papa La Baye. Rav Papa, if you remember back on Omer Aleph, had on Omer Beis, the previous Omer, had raised the objection. even in the case of Kri, it makes sense that the Levi should be potter from Truma Gedola, and it's not Tevel. And the reason for that is just like we said in the case of Shibala, Mikdim B'Shibala, the Levi is potter from Truma Gedola, Trumas Maser, so too it should extend that even in the case where the Yisrael was Mafrish the Maser after the Tvua had already reached the state of Kri. And the answer is Kamash Malon, Kidim Shani Le Abaye Le Rapop, like Abaye answer Rapopa, that in the case where it already reached the state of Kri in the hands of the Israel, then it's Tevel in the hands of the Levi when he gets Maaser Rishon before Truma Gedola was separated. And Truma Gedola now is coming to the Kohen, it's inherent in the Tvua, once it reaches Kri, it's after Digun, it's the Gancha. And now the Levi is Chayev in Truma Gedola, and if he doesn't separate Truma Gedola for the Kohen, then it's Tevel, and therefore it's Osir and it's Muktzah. The lowest Hamaser Sheni Vahegde Shalom Niftu. Once again, the Gemara is going to ask Pshita. Certainly, this should be Muktzah, and you're not allowed to be Mafana Muktzah on Shabbos because it's Osir to eat Hegdesh without Pidyon. Nor are you allowed to eat Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim without Pidyon. Lo Tzricha, the Chiddush of Mishnah is Niftu. Below Niftu kill Chasan. There was a kind of a pigeon, but not a full-fledged pigeon. And now we're going to be Mechadish that this pigeon is so incomplete, it's lacking and deficient, therefore it's not even a pigeon. What was the case? So let's take Maaser Sheni. He was Poda, the Tvua of Maaser Sheni, Al Gabi Asimon. Sasimon is a kind of a coin, but it's not really a coin. It's not currency. It's not officially recognized by the government. It doesn't have a tsura on it. It hasn't been minted yet. We used to have Asimonim here in Israel that we used for a public phone booth. You put it in and you get a dial tone. Rachman Amar, the Torah says, with regard to Pidyon Maaser Sheni V'Satar B'Kesef. V'Tzarta Kesef B'Yodecha. Emphasize the word Tzarta. And v'alachta l'makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha bo. So the word v'tzarta is going to teach us davar sheyesh bo tzura. It means that we're talking about a coin that's been minted. And although, again, if you translate the word v'tzarta literally, it means you shall bind the money in your hand. And what that means is that you take the money and you go to Maaser Sheni after you put it in a bag or in a pocketbook and you take it up to Yerushalayim. But the word Vetzarta is a little bit unusual. So the drosha is that it has to be Kesef, which is engraved with an image. In other words, it's a minted coin that has the full-fledged status of a Matbea according to Jewish law because it's been minted, it has a Tzura on it. And this is Nogea. Not just the Pidyon Maaser Sheni, it's also if you learn Perkaz Zov, you know, when you talk about doing Chalipin, so there are dinim that apply to currency that you could do Chalipin on, but you know, something like an Asimon that doesn't have a Tzura, it's not called currency. And here also, it's not Roy Le Pidyon Vegdish. What's the deficiency of this pigeon of Hegdesh? In Hegdesh, we don't have a requirement of Itzarta, Dorish Yeshbo Tzura, but he was poded on Karka. And the Torah says, with regard to the Hegdesh, in Vayikra Chav Zayin, it says, V'nosan ha-kesef v'komlo. And then it says, V'yosaf chamisha, so chamisha's kesef erkhalo v'komlo. So that the phrase v'komlo tells us that the kesef here is to the exclusion of karka. There's no pidyon hegdesh on karka. That's not called v'komlo. It means that v'komlo is implying something that's movable, like currency, and the exclusion here is karka, is real estate. That's not something that you can call v'komlo. So the Pasuk says he shall pay the redemption money and it, the consecrated object, will be secured to him. And it says v'komlo. What does it mean, secured to him? And here we're going to interpret it as a as an indication that it has to be something that's movable, as opposed to real property, real estate property. So the pigeon on real estate property is ineffective, and that's what our Mishnah wants to tell us. Therefore, it still has the status of Hegdish, which is also Bar Noah, or the status of Maaser Sheni, which is also Chutz Yerushalayim, and therefore it's Mukta because it's us. Veloas Haluf, we said that Luf was a kind of a bean, and when it's raw, the animals won't eat it, and therefore it's not Roy Lachilas Behema, it's Mukta. Rav Shim Gamliel, in our Mishnah, is Matir B'Luf, because he says that if he's a rich guy and he has ravens, he can feed Luf to raisins. To ravens, excuse me. So Tanu Rabbanon, Metaltalin Es HaChatzav. Chatzav is a kind of a grass. And this kind of grass, which roots grow straight down, it does not spread to its sides. Right? Min Esav Sheshroshav Yordin Kinegdon Li Omek Venim Mispashtin Litzdadim. And this is, by the way, one of the simonim of Yoshua for the gvulos between one shevet and the other in Sefer Yoshua. But in any event, mipnei shu machol, why are you allowed to move this grass? It is foodstuff litzvim, for deer. Now, I don't know if I'm raising deer or not, but if I take the approach of Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that even if I'm not rich, and I don't raise ravens, but nevertheless, Luf is not Muksa because the rich people that could afford ravens. And here also, even if I don't own any deer in my backyard, but nevertheless, it's not Muksa, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Ve esachardol, we're talking about mustard in its raw state, meneshu machal yonin, that doves will eat it. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, af metalton shivrei schuches, meneshu machal linaimos. So you have Bnos Hayana, which are called in English ostriches, and rich people will grow ostriches. They give birth to very big, large eggs, although we're not allowed to eat those eggs, they're not kosher. But in any event, they will even swallow shivrei zchuchis, you know, small pieces of broken glass. And apparently, this is something that is healthy for an ostrich. I think I have a note on this. Let me just see if I can find it. Okay, glass shards are fed to them, to these ostriches, and that's quite common. Okay, he doesn't seem to give me a reason why they eat glass, but I think it's good for the digestive system. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it for you and I, but for Basayana, that's okay. So that since Derech Malachim, it's for kings, they raise these ostriches, and Rav Shimon Gamliel has a rule called Kol B'nei Yisrael, B'nei Malachim, we are like princes, and therefore it's roy for us to feed the Shivrei Zchuchis to these ostriches, and therefore they're roy l'tashmish, and they don't have the status of Muktzah. So in other words, basically, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying that if it's roi, objectively, not for me, not, I'm not in that situation, but somebody else could use it, because he's a rich guy, then it's not mukta for me as well. Amalei Rabbi Nosson, so Rabbi Nosson turns to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and he says, in your expansion of Muchan, to remove mukta, Lameata, now we should come to the conclusion, Chavilei Zmoris Yitaltaleno. You know, if you have vines from a vineyard, which is pure mukta, you should be allowed to move them around. There shouldn't be any iser mukta. Neshu machala pilim. You know, somewhere on the face of the earth there are elephants. I don't own one, but it's roy because the elephants eat these zmoros. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says pilim lo shchichi. Neimos, nimios, shchichi. You know, it's, even though I admit that there's a limit to how far we can go to be matir muktzah, because it's really somewhere in the face of the earth, we need something that's more common. And if the rich people as a whole group will raise ravens, and they'll feed loof to ravens, or in the case of ostriches, they'll feed this glass to ostriches, that's considered mutal taltil, that's roy. But pilim, my gosh, who owns pilim? Who owns elephants? You know, some of the Eastern Asians, maybe they own their personal elephants, but that's not something that even the rich people are growing, are raising their own, you know, let's call it pili to peel. You know, that's also a taltal, even according to Shimon Gamliel. Omar Meimar, Meimar says, with regard to Shimon Gamliel, who's matil tiltul of shivrei zchuchis, for who de islei ne'imos. So this is a different interpretation of what we had before. We said that since Naimios are out there and they're common amongst the wealthy who raise them, that's enough to remove Muktzah. No. Says HaMeimer, Rav Shimon Gamliel is talking about a case where you own an ostrich. Omar of Ashila Meimar, Ella, according to you, the Kamale Rav Nosson, Rav Shimon Gamliel, what was the argument of Rav Nosson that he raised against Rav Shimon Gamliel when he said, Chavili's Moros, Yitaltalenim Neshu Machal Apilim? Enochinami, if he owns an elephant, so Rav Nosson is 100% right. Rav Shimon Gamliel would say, then and only then is it not Muktzah. Yisle Pilim. If he has his local, you know, his backyard, he's got an elephant. Am I low, and why shouldn't there be an Isur Muktzah? So what objection was Rabbi Nosson raising against Rav Shimon Gamliel? Ella, but rather, where Rabbi Nosson understood what his kasha was, we're talking about a person like you and I, we don't own Pilim, we don't have elephants raising in it. Is right, but nevertheless, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, should be right. And therefore, by analogy, Rabbi Nosson attacked Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and he said that Hachinami, here in the case of Shivrei Zchuchis, these broken shards, if Rav Gamliel is going to say, well, you know what, Pilim, you know, is so rare that it's mukt, so why not say the same thing as about Shivrei Zchuchis? And if on the other hand you're going to tell me that even if I don't own any ostriches, it's called roy and it's not muktzah, so why not apply that one step further to the elephants? And the answer is that there is a group of the population, a significant representation that raises ostriches, but no one owns elephants unless, as I said, you're out in Thailand. Omar Abaye, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon, Rav Yishmael, Rav Yekiva, Kulu, Svirale. They all hold this principle of Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim, and anything that's fit for the rich, for the upper echelons of financial society, like the princes, is considered royal of Kol Yisrael. So now, if I want to explain, where do we find these three Tanoim, they all operated and accepted the principle of Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim. So Rav Shimon Gamliel Hadamar, we've already said that he's going to be matir food like luf for arvim, for ravens, because the rich have ravens. So machal nimios, or the glass shards, because the ostrich owners, you know, who are very wealthy, they will feed shards to a glass shards to an ostrich. Rabbi Shimon. Where do we find that Rabbi Shimon holds that Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim? In this Nan, we learned the Mishnah back on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, that if somebody has some sort of a pain in his side, then we can smear oil on his side, and that's not called an Isur Afur. In other words, the rich people will do this kind of thing. They will take oil, and they will anoint their bodies with oil. Now, he's not a rich guy. He's only doing it for medicinal purposes, and yet Rav Shimon allows it. He permits it because if he would have been a rich person, then he would have been, for natural pleasure and luxury, he would have been anointing his body with oil. And therefore it's not considered nikar shesach l'refuah. And that's based on the principle of B'nai Malachim sochin al gavi makoseim shemen vered. Shekein darkon shel B'nai Malachim losuch bechol. The princes, the rich people, will use this kind of a very, very special oil. It comes from roses, and they'll use it to anoint their body even during the week. And if it's not considered muchach, it's not nikah, that it's a refuah. Why? Because Rav Shimon Omer, Kol Yisrael, B'nei Malachim. Okay, fine. So now, What about Rabbi Akiva? We have Rabbi Shimon. We had Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, again, in those cases of food for ravens and for ostriches. And we had Rabbi Shimon in the case of anointing one's body. What about Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva? That's also on Abai's list. Ah, the Sanya we learned in a Braisa, Resha, are you Noshim Bo Elef Mona? So a person owes a debt of 1,000 mona, which is a mona is a synonymous word for a zuz, 1,000 zuz. The lovush itztala. And he's wearing a beged, a very special royal garment, shebas mea mona. That means it's made of 100 mona. Okay? Now, 100 mona is aseres alofim zuz, is mafshitin oso, umalbishin oso, itztala hara'uyalo. In other words, we're allowed to strip him, so to speak, of this very wealthy garment, sell it on the open market, and use the money to pay up his chov, and we'll give him an itzlo, which is ruyalo. What do you? So the mos that are left over, they'll pay the chov. Tana b'shem Rav Yishmael, v'tana b'shem Rav Kiva, kol Yisrael ruyim lo say itzlo, and that's a shavu me'aman, because all of Yisrael are considered bnei malachim. So this brisa records a debate between the Tanakama on the one hand, Rav Yishmael and Rav Kiva on the other hand. Whereas the Tanakhama says, strip him of this very expensive garment that's worth 100 mana, and that'll be at least a partial repayment of the chov that he, the money that he owes. And even though we don't strip a person of his clothing in order to sell it for a chov, but in this case he doesn't, he's not appropriate. It's not appropriate for him to wear such an expensive garment. He's not the prince of the country. Comes along Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, and together they say, no, we're not going to sell this garment, even though it's an itzla that's worth 100 mana, something that only the princes wear. But nevertheless, we have a principle called Kol Yisrael Ruyim Lios B'nei Malachim, and therefore we're not allowed to strip this garment from him and sell it to pay his chov. And this leads us to Chavile Kash, v'chavile Eitzim, v'chavile Zrodim, which are all sorts of types of animal food, and the question is, did he designate it as such on Erev Shabbos, that even though normally, you know, this would be used for Hasaka, and therefore be classic Muktzah, we don't make fires on Shabbos, but he went ahead on Erev Shabbos, and he designated it for feeding the animals, and therefore it's mutter betiltul, and that's going to be Tan Rabbanan. Here the Braisa, which is quoted on Daf Kuf Chav Chesam and Aleph, says that Chavili Kash v'Chamili Eitzim v'Chamili Zrodim v'Miskinu l'machal behema, he designated it before Shabbos for animal food, is metaltul in Osad im lav. If he hadn't done so, ein metaltin also, because what do we do with these chavilos kash, aitzim? They are omdos la soka, they're really designated for fuel, which is muktzah on Shabbos. But Rav Shimon Gamliel omer, even chavilos that were designated on Erev Shabbos for Michael Behema, sometimes they're also a bit tiltal. Why? Shechavilin hanitolin biyad echad mutol etaltalon. But b'shtein daim also etaltalon. If these chavilos, these gigantic bundles of wood, are so heavy that it would take two hands to pick them up, then there's such a tircha to be metal to them that they have the status of mukta. So we're up to the first of the wide lines, the Tana Rabbanan that we just read, and specifically line 4 of the wide lines, Chavile Seah, And what's chavile seo? Let's just translate the ivra here, as we say. We're talking about bundles of seo, ezov, and korinos, all of which are legumes generally fed to animals, but sometimes they can be eaten by people. And hichnis only eats him if he put it aside because he wants to dry them up and use them for firewood, for fuel. Ain't mistopping them on Shabbos. He's not allowed to partake of them on Shabbos. But lemaichel behema, if he designated them on Erev Shabbos for animal fodder, then mistopping them on Shabbos, he's allowed to partake of them on Shabbos. And ubilvad shalo yiktom bekli, only provided that he doesn't break them up into small pieces with a utensil. Because normally during the weekday, you prepare these items as food, you would dice them up finely with a certain utensil. And on Shabbos, you're not allowed to dice them, because dicing comes under tochen, which is a tolda of tochen. Tochen is an av malach. So on Shabbos, he's not allowed to cut them into small pieces with a utensil. He could do it by hand. And therefore, bilvad shalo yiktom bekli. So again, kotein biyad, he's allowed to break them into small pieces by hand, but not bekli. Now, he designated them as animal fodder. They are somewhat fit for human consumption as well. As we said before, these are legumes that generally are fed to animals, but sometimes can be eaten by people. And if he wants to eat them for people, then he's allowed to be kotem, but he's not allowed to be kotem bekli, because that would be a melacha of grinding. Umolel v'ochel. Apparently, these legumes are covered by we'll call them pods, like a pea in a pod. Then he's allowed to rub them with his fingers to remove the pods and eat the seeds. Right, he shouldn't rub them off with a utensil, you know, to remove the pod. Or shall we say, remove the seed from its pod? And it seems from Divrei Rabbi Yehuda that that's if he uses a kli for a larger amount of these seeds, or call them legumes. And that's the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And apparently, Rabbi Yehuda wants to take the seeds out of the pod in a way that it doesn't constitute a malacha. Now, what malacha are we dealing with? So let me read to you the beer here that I have. Just one second. I have here the following. Just one second. He says, Kotein biyad lechatichos dakos v'yochel bevad shelo yiktom bekli kishfishu rogil lasos bechol mipnei shekiti mosam yibichlam leches toche. Okay, so that's all we got. He should not use a kli to grind them up into small pieces, these legumes. Okay, fine. So that's chavilei zia and ezov and kurnis, all these kinds of legumes and grasses and so forth and so on. Now he says, in Ritzono Lechol Asazir Onim Shevetoch HaSovim, apparently these kinds of legumes have seeds in them, and he wants to take the seed out of the pod, is Molel, he's allowed to be Molel the Sharvet is that pod that covers it, so he's got these seeds inside a pod, the Ochel. However, says Rabbi Yehuda, Bilvad shel yimlo bekli harbe biyachad, he shouldn't do with a kli if it's a large volume in one shot. That's Rabbi Yehuda. So he says, also lefarek, this is already meleches mefarek, dogon. When you have grains and you want to be mefarek, you thresh the grains and you remove the shibolim, the husks, or in the case of kidneys, we call them sharvitim. And this is meleches mefarek, which is a told of meleches dash. And Rabbi Yehuda says that if you do this process of melila with a kli, that's prohibited. You're only allowed to do it with your hands. And when Rabbi Yehuda says u'bilvad shelo yimlo b'kli harbe, so we thought he meant that it's a kamus gedola, it's a great volume, and that he's not allowed to do with a kli. He's allowed to do this if it's a smaller amount, even if he does it with a kli. No, that's not pshat. So we're going to quote a bunch of Rishonim here, Rav Moshe Kaziz and the Rosh, the Ritva, others. They say the following: Im Kain, if that's the pshat, that would, it, everything depends upon volume, according to Rav Yehuda. Hoyelo lefarish ma'u harbe ma'u ma'at. You know, give me shiurim, define for me what's considered a large amount and what's considered a small amount. Ella, but it must be the Rav Yehuda lo hita limlol b'kli klal. So Rishonim say that there's no way that Rav Yehuda is going to allow you to remove the pod from the peas with a kli, with a utensil. That would certainly be meleches mefarik. Kol melila bekli nechsheves ki melila meruba. No matter how small of an amount he's doing, it's called melila meruba. And as we said before, that's an iser. And klape melila biyado, if we compare melila bekli to relative to melila biyado, it's always considered bekli to be considered meruba. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda meant over here when he said meruba is also, he's differentiating between melila biyad and melila bekli. Chachomim omrim molel beroshe etzba osav vi ochel. So it means that he's allowed to rub the pods with the tips of his fingers to remove the seeds and eat the seeds. He will vad, but on one condition, shelo yimlo biyodo harbe, kiderech shu ose bechol. So here it seems that the Chachamim are introducing another element into the equation. That's kiderech shu ose bechol. L'divrei Chachamim, reading the Bir, he says, "Ein hamelila muteres elim ke naseis b'shinui b'rosh yetzbos of a lo b'chol yad." So it doesn't mean that he has a carte blanche leniency, as Rabbi Yehuda would have it, to remove the pod from the peas with his hands. No, 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 no. He's got to do it in a shinui, in an unusual way, and only if he does it in an unusual way will we allow him to do this melila biyat. Now, even in a case where he does it in an unusual way, like we said before, shelo yimlo kiderech shehu ose b'chol, okay, so he's already doing it with the fingertips, which is a little bit strange, and he's made that change, the tips of his fingers. But on top of that, there's another condition that has to be met, and that is rak ma'at v'lo harbe k'derech chol. So the two ways of setting it up is derech chol, either if he does a normal ma'isa melila, or the volume that he's being molel is a large volume. So he has to fulfill, according to Chacham, these two conditions. He's got to do melila b'shinu, which means barash yetzbosov, and he's got to do it ma'at and not harbe, and therefore it's not going to be k'derech shu ose b'chol. Now, this heter of shinui that we said before, which is quoted here according to the Chacham in Asugya, that's only with regard to Seon, Ezov, and Kornis. Those are the tzmachim that are mentioned here in Asugya. Here, necholim miyad liachar melilason. Since he's going to eat it immediately, he's not storing it for the future. After he removes the you know, with his fingertips, he removes the pods and he eats them immediately. That's called a melila b'shinui, that's mutter, because it's for miyat. And we've seen categories like this, if you remember, similar categories with regard to borer, that borer liotzer is a melacha of borer. Here also, melilul yotzer is not acceptable. Tvua v'kidneyus, other than these that we're dealing with, af liachem melilason, he's not going to eat it miyat. There's going to be a longer process until he's ready to eat it. You need shchika, you need dicha, you may need bishul. That's not like the peas that he's eating immediately when he does the melila. And all the others that require a long process until they're really edible, then you're not allowed to do the melila on Shabbos at all, even if you fulfill all these conditions that we mentioned. You know, it's between his fingertips and it's a small amount. And therefore, v'chein will add to the list. We already have three kinds of legumes on the list. We'll add a few more. V'amisa, v'chein bepegam, all sorts of types of growths and plants. V'chein v'shamini tvolin, or for example, different kinds of spices. This is going to be the long list of plants that are subject to the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. Just again, to review, whereas according to to Rabbi Yehuda, anything that he does biyad is mutter. Anything that he does bekli is asur, because of disha. And it doesn't matter how much of a volume he's doing with the kli, it's always asur. Chachamim say that even when we allow melila biyad, it's got to have two other conditions that are fulfilled. It's got to be barash etzbosav, it's a shinui, and it's got to be a small amount. All of this is so that he can eat it immediately, and then it's considered tol kedei achila, and that applies to these six categories that we have here. Maya misa, what is this thing called amisa? And the Gemara says that is a tzemach, that is a plant that's called ninya. Ninya, it might sound very foreign to you, but it's really a nana. Okay, so nana is something that we're familiar with. It's like spearmint. Let's see exactly what we can call it. he calls it here, one second, he calls it mint. Okay, I called it spearmint, he calls it mint. Sia, what is sia? The Gemara wants to know. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, tzasre. Okay, great. Now I know what sia is, because I know what tzasre is, correct? So Rashi quotes his Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzhak Alevi, who identifies sadre, as some sort of old, fresh, savory, aromic herb. Alternatively, Rashi identifies it as pennyroyal, again, a type of mint. And we have azov, which is abarsa hyssop, that you'll see in the parasha of Taras Metzora. Anyway, koronis, what is koronis? Is koronisa shma. Okay, fine. What's koronisa? Koronisa, guess what? We don't know what koronisa is. We just know that karnis is karnisa. Vahudi Amala, there was a person, a merchant, who said to others, my boy karnisa, who wants to buy karnisa? Vishtakach chashe. And instead he was offering chashe. Now there's a drug called chashe, but I don't think that that's what the Gemara has in mind here. Rashi identifies chashe as sadri, which we said before, in Old French, is some savory kind of aromatic herb, and it's acceptable according to this alternative definition given for tzasre. Okay, this is not reflective of Rabbi Yitzhak HaLevi, but anyway, this incident with the merchant shows that Koronisa is chashre, also known by name Koreinus, or Koronesa. So again, all this requires a lot of research in botany. I'm sure in Zeroyim there's going to be a lot, and we'd have to probably refer to a three-volume work by Emmanuel Lowy, which is called Der Floren der Talmud. But for this, we really have to do more research. So we got up to Itmar, and that's going to be, I would say, approximately 10 lines up before the end of the daf, where the two dots are. And that Amir Tzeshem on the bottom of Kuv Chav Ches Amir Aleph will pick up in the next year.